This one's good if it goes.
Oh, my goodness.
Cow.
Are you kidding me?
Let's it go.
He can fry an egg on his head right now. I mean, the guy's sizzling.
I guess you got to hope for a dramatic 40.
Oh, boy.
Oh, they got it. Jones. Oh,
yes.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to the world's greatest podcast known as Courtside. I'm Seth Greenberg with my main man, Dan Dukich, who now owns a golf club. He had a little bit of a grand opening yesterday. He came back. Now he's on the show today with us, even though he's a golf club owner. He's wearing a shirt, and it doesn't even have the name of his country club that he owns. I mean, like, I've never had a conversation with a guy that owned a country club. So I just want to know, you know, I caddied at country clubs. I play every once in a while country club. But I mean, like what's ownership like?
Seth, I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, I'll make fun of it, but it's a little thrilling. I grew up, and the place that I'm a part owner, I don't own the whole thing. We're very part owner. We couldn't play at. We couldn't afford it, so we caddied, and it was literally Caddyshack. It was 9 to 12 on Mondays we could play, and they always had the sprinklers on. So, you know, it was one of those deals where my brother, myself, our neighbors, we would in the summer get up at 5 in the morning, get on our bikes, ride it, you know, 4 or 5 miles, whatever it is, to the country club, and wait in line to be a caddy. You did it. I mean, we waited in line. You put your name in. Then you sit there. It literally was Caddyshack. And I was the
youngest. Before we get to hoops, the Caddyshack thing, because you see where I caddy, Lake Success Country Club in Great Neck. Like, I don't know any of those guys' names because they all had nicknames. What was the craziest name or craziest character that there was in the caddy guy?
There was a guy. Now, I was the youngest guy. Okay, my brother was 2 years older. My neighbors were older, you know, 1, 2, 3 years. There was a dude named Fly, okay?
Fly. I love it.
Just
love
Fly.
It.
And Seth, for some reason, Seth, I don't know the reason, you could, you know, the caddy house was off of the fourth hole by the parking lot. You could open the gate, walk into the caddy house, sign up. The gate was probably, I don't know, seemed like 20 feet high when I was a kid. It's probably 8 feet high, right? The chain link fence.
Yep.
For some reason, Fly would never use the door to come or go. He would climb the fence, come down. That's why everybody called him Fly. Hey man, what's Fly? Oh yeah, Fly's coming. And so they would call down or whatever and say, "Okay, Fly, you got Mr. McGillicuddy." He wouldn't walk out the door, Seth. Over the fence and down. But you know, I would sit in the corner and hope not to get beat up. Because, you know, those were older dudes, and they'd play basketball, and I'd watch, and, you know, just hope my name got called because I was the junior caddy, and they'd give me a bag like caddy. You know, back in those days, Seth.
Oh, Burton bags. The big huh? leather, the big leather yeah. Burton bags.
Yeah.
Those things were brutal.
Yeah.
The and they didn't have leather trap.
Yeah.
On they, didn't have the,
they didn't have two straps and – they made out of, you know, I don't know, fabric or fiber. These were made out of leather. And my little skinny ass would be carrying them. And but anyway, yeah, I never did doubles. I wasn't strong enough. And I always loved when I could chase the cart. You know, somebody would take a cart and you'd be a four
potter. The potter's the greatest. You grab the potter.
But you know what? Hey, Seth, I made my son do that because you learn the rules of golf. You learn how to hold the flag.
Interact with people. The greatest thing about caddying is you learn to communicate and interact with people.
And you learn etiquette.
The greatest social skills lesson.
Yeah. You learn etiquette. You learn about the older guys sneaking booze in underneath the bushes in the back. You learn about what I really learned was how much guys lie about sex, if you want to know the truth. Because that's all they would do was sit there. And I'm like, and when I got older, I'm like, these dudes were like 15 years old. They weren't doing what they said they were doing, you know?
I mean, a Katmandu used to come with little things of cat food. and he used to put them out, and 8,000 cats would come into the cattle yard. It was disgusting, and they'd be all over him because they knew as soon as he came. So Catman Dew, he was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And stretch. All right, here's what's unbelievable. Let's do the NBA first before we get to NIL. All right, we've got teams trying to get to the finals of the NBA. We've got Trae Young out. We've got Giannis out. Obviously, you had Kawhi out. I say I don't care. Like, here's the deal. Here's the deal. I mean, that's all part of it. It's all part of the journey. Like, you know, there's going to be road stops and detours and potholes, and that's just the way it is. Everyone said, well, you know, the Suns, they didn't play against Anthony Davis and Jamal Murray, and all that stuff sounds great. Here's the deal. Everyone goes through the same season. Play the games. And like you see, to me, what we learned, I think the thing we learned from this playoffs, forget about the injuries, is home court's a
Oh.
Home court's a Like last year in a sterile bubble, I understand the mental issue when it came to the bubble in terms of being there for 4 months without your family in the bubble, limited access to the outside world. But when you're traveling and then playing another game in another city in a packed arena, you see the value of the home court more than maybe the discomfort, because the discomfort for the bubble was the same for everyone that continued to advance. The home court is unbelievable. I mean, the environment last night in Milwaukee was incredible. Your thoughts?
Seth, you and I talked about it last year, the runs that a home court gives you or the runs that a home court stops of your opponent is stunning. I think what's interesting about the NBA, and I'm going to get into something here. We always talk about, well, star-driven league. Well, you know what? Stars have been out, and team has replaced star. I mean, how about Brook Lopez last night? You know, people make fun of Brook Lopez for whatever the reason. I don't get it. Dude's an NBA player that's had a fantastic career, but Brook Lopez was tremendous last night. You know, Lou Williams for the Hawks the night before. But I will tell you this. I have been Charles Barkley, myself, and you are the only three people I listen to about basketball. I'm not going to lie to you. They are, because I'm listening to guys. They're talking about – let me run this by you. You're down 3-1 in a series. You're playing. The easiest game to play is the fifth game. Paul George has a great fifth game. Paul George is a complete fraud. I've said it on these networks. He complete. And let me explain. The easiest game to play is that fifth game, because there's no pressure. You lose, you go home. You win, you contend. Now, and I said this on every show that I was on all week, let's see what he does in game six, because now the series is back. And now it's like the golfer that's six strokes off on Sunday. He relaxes and shoots himself a sexy little 62 and gets back in the hunt. People that have played golf professionally understand what I'm talking about. Paul George had that in game five. Game six, now it's real. And he completely crapped the bed, Paul George style. And while many on our network, well, it was desperate. I heard one of our best hosts ever talk about, well, it was desperation time. There's 110% he gave. No, he didn't. He relaxed because the game had no pressure. Game six, that had pressure, and Paul George did what Paul George does, and he took a dump in his pants. That's
See, and that, look, I understand all the background. I still, me personally, I look at him. I thought they added an extra defender. I thought they got up and underneath him. I thought that they were outmanned. I still think that dude is really, really good. I know you don't like
him. Not when it matters. Never has been. Not when it matters. He's really good. You know what, Seth? He good enough to get you fired. Malcolm Brogdon. Malcolm Brogdon.
What happened to you?
I know. Malcolm Brogdon. Good enough to get you fired. Malcolm Brogdon been through like four coaches in the NBA in his time. For some reason, people pay attention to Malcolm Brogdon. Malcolm Brogdon, good enough to get you fired. Paul George, good enough to get you fired.
All right. Speaking of Indiana, Rick Carlisle. Yeah. First thoughts.
I think he's great. I'm going to talk to him today on my show. He called me two nights ago. I didn't answer. I was in the middle of Mad Men, and I really like Mad Men. So I started watching that. I'm like, yeah, I don't care. So the thing that's interesting about the NBA, and I wanted to bring this up to you. So Carlisle, they made a big deal here in Indy about Bjorgren, the coach, had a bad staff, okay? And that included Cal Bertani, which I took offense to because I love Cal. So now, and this is, you know, I know we're all supposed to be politically correct and we're all supposed to say the same thing, but I think of things differently. So now my guy, Carlisle, I'm going to ask him this. He hires two guys, both neither of whom have had any success in the NBA, Lloyd Pierce and Ronald Norad. Good guys. Norad's a great kid. I don't know Pierce, but we never talk about the retread assistant coach. Like, if you haven't been on a staff that was good over here, what makes you think that the assistant coach is going to bring anything to a staff over here? I'm serious. We always talk about the retread head coach. Like, we can't have a retread head coach, blah, 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 blah. But what about the retread assistant coach? Because when a coach gets fired, how often everybody, you and I talk about all the time, staff is so important. Staff is so important. You got to say, all right. I don't know. I watch these NBA teams, and you know what they do? They hire the same guys. Like, this guy Fizdale was all the rage. All right, I get it, but like we had a guy here, Dan Burke, the defensive genius. Okay, never won anything here, but all right. What about the retread assistant coach?
You gonna ask Carlisle that about a staff?
Yep. Yeah. Do you agree with that or disagree with that?
Well, I think it's two totally different jobs because Lloyd Pierce was a head coach. Lloyd Pierce was a head coach in the NBA. Now, he took over. He was an assistant coach at Atlanta before he became a head coach, if I'm not mistaken. And maybe I might be wrong.
He was. And they let him go. And now, the Pacers should have never fired Nate McMillan.
100%.
But that guy can love Nate McMillan. I'm a big Nate McMillan fan. I said it at the time, screamed to the high heavens. But – I'm a fan of Carlisle. I know you coached him at Virginia.
In 84, he was on that team that made it to the Final Four. And, you know, here's the thing. Carlisle, connection to Bird help him get that job?
Yeah, oh, God.
Bird. He was Bird's guy from his Celtics days.
Some NBA teams – some NBA – would you agree with this? Some NBA teams are corporations, kind of. The Pacers are like a mom-and-pop shop. They really are close knit, you know, like they hired Vogel after he was an assistant. They hired Nate after he was an assistant. Nate had been with Kevin Pritchard, the president. You know, I think Pritchard and Carl may have played a bit together with the Celtics with Bird was there. You know what I mean? So Bird is like the godfather, you know, freaking godfather that drafted
like the matriarch. He's like the matriarch of the Pacers.
Actually, Donnie Walsh is the matriarch.
That's true. That is true.
Okay. But Bird's also the guy that drafted Miles Plumlee over Draymond Green. And I've been harping on that forever. So maybe it's time for a new matriarch, even though you can't say anything bad about Larry Bird. Larry Joe Bird, as they call him here.
Yeah, that would be a hard thing to do. He actually had a pretty good career and has a
He was pretty good.
He's got a golf course too, you know. So in case you want to go up there and Terre Haute and play,
where's his golf course?
I thought he has a golf course in Terre Haute, doesn't he? He's got a hotel.
One in French Lick is beautiful. And if you ever want to bring your boys down, we'll give you an ass kick. And it's a Pete Dye course. It's the most beautiful course in the Midwest. I don't know if I can get you guys on though.
I can understand that. So Carlisle gets the job.
Yeah.
What is the expectation, like, you know, every time a guy is hired, what do you think the expectation is? What's the ceiling for the Pacers?
Malaise right now. You know, Seth, you and I talk about it. You got to have momentum in your program, right? You got to have – they don't have much momentum. Rick brings it. Rick brings momentum, like, because he's won a championship. People here really liked him. You know, he was coaching here, and he got fired. But people really liked him. So there's interest now, total malaise about it. I think season tickets would have really been a struggle here. But I think Rick is one of those guys that people, even though, you know, here's a bit of a problem. They fired Nate McMillan because Nate hadn't won a playoff series. Well, Rick hadn't won a playoff series in 10 years since he won championship. So that's, you know, people bring that up, but there's momentum here now.
Yeah.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Anybody more fun than the Phoenix Suns?
I think the Phoenix Suns play, I think they're the best team in the NBA right now. They play the best basketball. Like you saw, you talk about coaching. All right, so they got whacked by the zone one day. So what do? They come back the next game. And I said this on GetUp. Like Monty Williams, he's not afraid to coach his team. So he comes back the next day. They didn't shoot on the first side. They didn't just come off that one ball. So we first played a game. They run the lob, boom, dunk. And the lob, we all run against zones. It doesn't work as much in college because everyone knows if a team runs that play, that's something you cover in the scouting report. But if you're not really a zone team, you're not ready for it, you probably didn't cover it, it gives up the dunk. The Suns, here's what I call the Suns. Elite leader in Paul, elite scorer in Booker. You know, to me, DeAndre Ayton runs the floor, rebounds balls out of his area, can defend ball screens, can switch, does all those things. And then their quote-unquote role players just do what they do. And they actually run offense and share the ball and play basketball. When they cut hard. It's like against the zone. I think Crowder had one cut where they reversed it. They ran a guy into the post and out, and the second cutter came right through, and he caught it and laid it in. Like, to me, they advanced past the ball up the floor. Guys played with confidence but with a purpose. I thought that, to me, I enjoy watching the Suns play. Like I had a hard time watching the NBA playoffs. I enjoy watching the Suns play. And I'll tell you one thing. Last night, I enjoyed watching the Bucks play because they got the ball into the post. Actually, Brooks Lopez was not a spacer standing in the corner waiting for someone to double. He was actually a 7-foot-1 guy that caught it on the post and scored, especially the left block. They ran offense. They reversed the ball. They were really good. Their defense was really good. That's the first Bucks game I watched this season that I said, you know, I like the way they're playing. Because they've been unwatchable. And I'm interested to see now when if Giannis comes back, why not play? Why can't, like, the middle game and post-ups, all right, are real shots. They're winning plays. So, like they got the ball. He scored 33 points last night in the paint. He shot layups, jump hooks. Why can't you play him in a dunker spot and on a block and still play Giannis on the elbow and have him drive it? I don't get it.
Seth, I agree with you on everything you just said. And Giannis seems like a great guy. Like, he's probably just out winning. Let me go one route with you, because I've always claimed, I'll let it go. But what did you think, my boy Frank Kaminsky? I'm gonna let it go because I've always told the world who Frank Kaminsky is. And the world just saw it the other day.
He didn't have his guys back.
Didn't at all. Didn't it? That's their guy, Sam. I know you're trying to just get through these last two podcasts with me so you don't get fired. I can see it in your
face. No. Go ahead. I'm listening.
I don't know what you're supposed to do there, right? Like, I don't know. But I know this. Nobody gonna get mad at you for tackling Patrick Beverly, you know. But I've always said that about Frank Kaminsky. I thought Frank was having a really nice career going, and then he tried to become TV. He tried to become Pat McAfee, really. I mean, Pat's a star, but Pat was an all pro punter. He tried to become a Twitter guy in a mouth, and he got exposed. I get it. He chugs a beer, and everybody goes nuts in the. I'd have a bit of a hard time as a teammate with that one, because I, like, dude.
What do you think happens in the locker room when he goes back?
I don't know. I was kind of wondering what you thought, because I know I've talked about being bullied as a kid and not standing up for myself one time in my life, and it had changed a lot in my life. Maybe not for the better, but I always never wanted to feel like a chicken shit again. And nobody would have to say anything to me, I think. I think I would feel like, frankly, such a chicken that I don't know, Seth.
Let me ask this. What do you think Chris Paul said to Beverly?
Oh, I don't know that one. That's got to be – you don't have to say much to Beverly, though.
Yeah, you know? He was – and then he comes in with his apology tweet.
Seth, you know – people get on my ass in Indiana because I had Eric Gordon and we lost in the tournament first round, but we lost to Patrick Beverly. And Patrick Beverly kicked Eric Gordon's ass. Patrick Beverly You know, he committed to Toledo.
Wow.
And I'm sitting at Bowling Green, and that's our rival. And my guys in Chicago are like, dude, this guy's the real deal. So I was so happy when he went to Arkansas, right? But you know, I don't think Chris Paul had to say much after unloading 41 on him in a big game like that. Do you?
No, and I also think that Chris Paul, after, you know, the incident with when he landed on his back, and then Patrick Beverley, he did that whole act like he was flopping and all that jazz. That's why he got the flagrant one. So I don't think he got flagrant one for the foul. I think that's flagrant one for his behavior after it, especially to Chris Paul, who's a little bit of an ambassador for the league, that you got to almost protect that a little bit. But I can watch the Suns all day.
Last thing on the Kaminsky thing. So last weekend, I was in a golf tournament, and Jerry Seasting is a guy. I always get along with Jerry. Jerry played with the Celtics 86 to 89, was in the league for 100 years as an assistant head coach. So Jerry and I are having breakfast. We're sitting there, and I happen to see this fight. If you want to see a fight, Ralph Sampson and Jerry Seasting in the NBA Finals. And if you want to see teammates having the back of teammates, Seth, it is holy hell. That's what you're supposed to do as a teammate. Watch that fight right there. And that's what you're supposed – I get it. You get fined. I get it. Maybe – I mean, but
– different era of the NBA.
Yes. Yes. Different era.
It's a different era of the NBA.
But it's a great fight, though, Seth. You got to watch it.
Two things. The transfer portal. You see that Kofi Coburn's in the transfer portal.
Man.
And who said before July 1, you're going to see a second wave of guys in the portal? I said it. And here's the deal is that, and I just tweeted this out today, coaches, like coach your teams, don't be afraid of the portal, because you know what? If those guys are going to leave, they're not going to help you win anyway. And you got to coach your teams, because you're doing an injustice to your teams and you're doing injustice to that player by being afraid to coach them. And like, I'm talking to coaches and they, you know, they're flummoxed or whatever the hell it is. I mean, like, what do they do? I said, look, if you don't coach your teams, then you're cheating that kid. That doesn't mean scream, yell, rant, rave, demean. That means coach them and coach them hard and demand of them, have a standard and push them and challenge them. Because the second you don't is the second that your team will never reach its potential. So I think that, like Kofi Coburn in the portal, I thought I watched Brad Underwood, and I thought they had a great relationship. I watched them. I watched that team. I thought that team had a good vibe and an energy and a passion. And I don't know if he looks at it and says, you know what, I don't want to be part of this rebuilding process. I want to go to the tournament next year if I'm going to come back. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's maybe the guy that recruited him. Who's at Kentucky now? But Kentucky has Oscar Sheway. It's not like they need another big low post player. Or someone just recruited him. You know what? It could also be with NIL. It could also be someone just recruited him right off of Illinois' roster. Because let's be honest. All these guys, especially the guys that are coming back and deciding to pull their name out of the draft, they're free agents. And now they're free agents with a free market of NIL that some people are going to use it, and they can say, well, you can't use it for recruiting, you can't use it to get all the advantage. That's BS. I mean, that's just flat BS. I mean, that's like saying, well, you know, it's got to be a level playing field. Well, you know what? The way Indiana runs the program, or Fairleigh Dickinson runs the program, is two different things.
Right.
No playing field. You can't legislate it, so stop with that. But I could see. A quote unquote strong ass offer type situation for Kofi Coburn, someone getting to someone in his camp and saying, hey, school X, Y, and Z, they got an NIL deal that's going to get you, you know, $300,000 or $400,000 next year. You know, obviously, you know, what's Illinois done for you? What's going to be their policy? What's going to be their, you know, procedure with NIL? Do they have it taken care of? Once you said you were coming back, do they have everything in place for you? Which you're not supposed to, but obviously, we know that's unrealistic. So, was that a shock to you with Coburn? Because you covered it like anyone.
Seth, Kofi Coburn has been, over the last 2 years, my favorite, maybe it's 3 years, my favorite improvement watch. Does that make sense? Like, yeah. I did it. Jim Larrañaga and Miami came in there into Illinois, and I did the game, and Kofi was a freshman. And like most freshmen, Kofi had no idea how to play the ball screen. Seth, at one point, now Illinois made a huge comeback, but at one point in the first half, an okay Miami team, you know, not a great Miami. Okay.
They haven't been good in a couple of years.
Yeah, but they were up 30 in the first half at Illinois with a packed house. Fast forward to the end of the year, Kofi Coburn has a lot of that figured out. Fast forward to the next year, he's really good at doing things that he wasn't good at. Because he's a great kid. I mean, great. He's just a fantastic worker. So the coaching staff, I felt like with Kofi Coburn, really busted their ass. And he did as well to make him better. Now, to your point, Antigua and Coleman leave. Does that make Kofi uncomfortable now? And Steve Gentry left. Does that make Kofi Coburn uncomfortable now? I don't know. I don't know what happens with this NIL. And if anybody says that they do, they're lying because nobody does. But, Seth, it shocked the living hell out of me. First, that he didn't stay in the draft, because I think he should. I think he's body-wise and all that stuff.
He's not going to improve his stock any.
No, and you're going to start over somewhere, right? You're gonna start over. So I was shocked. I'm sad for Illinois basketball, the fans, because that dude literally was discovered by that coaching staff. And I get so tired of people criticizing college coaches. Look, that coaching staff, whoever it was, or maybe it was everybody, went to work with that kid. And that kid went to work too. Don't get me wrong. But you mentioned it, man. Strong-ass offers are now legal. I feel like there's literally going to be no enforcement of any of this. So a school can basically do whatever he wants. And maybe that's it. Maybe he ends up in Kentucky because he's got this, you know, relationship with Orlando Antigua or Ron Cole. I don't know, but I was sad to see that, because that dude and that staff worked really well together to make that kid a better player.
Here's my thing with this. And this is just the portal in general. There are kids that probably didn't even know they were going to be in the portal, but some people are shopping them. And I've been saying this forever. I don't know. I don't know if Kofi's one of those guys. I'm not pointing fingers, but I'm just saying there are guys that have people that are basically shopping them and selling them. You talk about exploitation of players. They don't even know it. And then are coming to guys go, those summer workouts, if they're going the way you want you to go, you know, I got this guy over here, and I'll tell you what, they got NIL figured out, man. I mean, they'll take care of you. And, you know, your guys there, what have they done for you? We've been 2 weeks into NIL. Everyone knows it's coming. What's their plan for you? You know, how are they going to take care of you? Are they taking care of themselves, but they're not taking care of you? That is going to be a problem. And I'm not saying that's the reason that happened, but I mean, that's good.
Take Coburn out. Take Coburn out of the question. Take him out. That is what's happening, as you well know, and that is what's going to continue to happen. And that's going to be a problem. It's not in every situation, but Seth, guys cheated or did that kind of stuff when the rule book was this freaking thick, right? Now the rule book is non-existent. You kidding me? Please.
Yeah, I think it become, you know, it's a real issue. And look, I'm all for players getting what they earn and what they deserve. I mean, there are people now saying, well, now they need to have profit sharing. Well, you know, like, I mean, and here's the deal. Name, image, and likeness, and we're going to have this big rush and everything's going to happen. I think some guys are going to be able to monetize their social media like you and I talked, camp situations like you and I talked. There'll be very few that are going to get national recognition. Schools are going to have to try to figure out how to navigate it, and I think the more rogue programs are going to navigate it better. I mean, that's just the way because they're going to have less fear of here's my other question. Do you think Reggie Bush, the Fab Five — we were hearing a lot of this conversation — Reggie Bush, the Fab Five, they should have all their records reinstated? Now here's my opinion, and I'm going to give you my opinion real quickly. It's real simple. What were the rules in that moment in time? All right. So everyone thinks cheating is not a victimless crime, but cheating is a victimless crime. It cost the players that played against those guys that were getting paid, that they weren't getting paid. It cost them opportunities of lifetime memories. It cost coaches their jobs. I disagree with it. I mean, I understand that's not in vogue, but I disagree with it.
I understand why guys are saying that now. Like, I understand why Reggie Bush and who was it, Weber, I understand. You might as well take a swing. I've always kind of thought, huh, maybe that's why the Duke guys are so, I don't know. When people are adamant about something, I always have, my brain works weird. It's like, what's the story behind the story? So I get why guys want to do that. But there was rules in place when Reggie Bush did what he did. The rules said that this is what's going to happen. Weber's a different deal. When Weber talks, I just don't. I mean, whatever. Weber and the Fab Five, they got their banners taken away because they did what they did when the rules were what they were. So I think it's simple, but you know how society is today. You know how it is. But my opinion, if you like people say now, well, Indiana should never have fired Calvin Sampson because now you can send text messages. Well, the rules that were at the time were that you could. It's that simple. I know we're trying to move ourselves to a lawless society in all areas, but hey, look, if you cheated when the rules were such, then the crime is the crime, or the punishment's the punishment, not the crime. The punishment's the punishment.
In any walk of life. So are they going to go back and throw out everything that, you know, it's at, like, here's the thing that, you know, whether you like them or not. And there were a lot of things in the NCAA I just absolutely, I thought were atrocious. Look, I'm not an NCAA apologist. My brother got banned for the NCAA for 5 years for doing a humane thing, taking a kid from France and putting him on a bus to go 24 hours because he didn't want to leave him at home in Radford because he would have been by himself with no money, with no food, with no transportation in the country for, you know, a month and a half with limited English. I mean, and he gets a 5-year suspension. So I'm not an NCAA apologist by any means. But when there are rules and if you don't abide by them, there's a consequence. And now if those rules change, all right, then you ride by the new rules. But when rules are in place, if you're one of the few that broke them or got caught breaking them, you got to be held accountable. And just because things change, like in a court of law, just because things change, you're not throwing away all of the violations that people committed in the court of law prior to that. No, because at that time those were the laws. Now when the laws change, then you have a new set of rules to abide by. I mean, it's plain and simple to me.
I have a few mottos that I live by. One of them is no good deed goes unpunished. No good deed goes unpunished. I really believe that. Anytime you do a good deed, like, you know, and one of the other ones is, like, I've always tried to do the right thing in my life, and it doesn't really work out well for you. In our society, doing the idiotic thing and then b-ing about it seems to work. So the Fab Five and Reggie Bush and whoever else, I'm still stunned Will Wade has a job. I know that he's now, but I'm so stunned Will Wade has a job. But doing the right thing in basketball is the wrong thing. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we know things about some of these greatest coaches ever that weren't exactly according to the rules. That's why I always say Bob Knight's the greatest coach in the history of basketball, because he'd fire your ass if you made one phone call when it was one phone call a week, if you made two, and he didn't have to play all home games. And he would play. I'll tell anybody that asks you that. Doing the right thing in college basketball has never been good. I learned it in broadcasting too, doing the right thing in broadcasting doesn't work out for you either. But doing the right thing, being a cheat, eventually – works out for you. So eventually, they're going to give Reggie Bush's thing back. They're going to give the Fab Five their deal back. And Will Wade will sign an extra deal and a contract. I bet you Sean Miller's sitting there going, damn, couldn't you just wait it? Right? Couldn't you just wait it 6 months? But doing the wrong thing in college basketball is historically the right thing to do if you want to be successful and if you can live with yourself. I couldn't live with myself.
It's mind-boggling. Name, image, and likeness is going to make people money. And we saw the big thing about the two girls from Fresno State. I think soccer players, tennis players, swimmers.
My wife.
They're going to find a niche.
I have a theory that if every media guy says this is a good thing, I read a lot of the Bible, man. If every media guy, it's an upside down world if you read the Bible. If every media guy says this is a good thing, then it's clearly the wrong thing. I'm just telling you.
Because every media guy. Problem with it. I just don't think it's going to be people say, oh, this guy's going to be worth $1 million. This person's going to. There'll be some people that are going to monetize it. There's no doubt about it. They might not be the people we all think are going to monetize it, though. And then,
I had a priest that told me more money, more headaches.
Yeah, well, that's true. Hey, but
the Fresno State thing is interesting, and I'm not going to get into it, but it is interesting, and it's going to be interesting whether male or female make more money. There are a lot of people, including Nicole Arbaugh and Dennis Dodd, who were on a show that I did Wednesday, that feel like the female athlete is going to make way more money than the male athlete. They both said that, and I didn't think about it. Then I saw the Fresno State thing, and then I saw some of the Instagram posts, and I'm like, huh, maybe Nicole's right. Maybe no, Dennis.
I think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see there are going to be different opportunities for different people. I mean, but
all right, let me ask you this. The idea, like, maybe you and I talked about this on my show, but let's talk about it here. So I see where one of the Indiana players, Christian Lander, hey, I'm open for business. You know, hit me on my DMs, blah, 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 blah. My thought as a coach is, hey, Christian, you shot like an air ball a game. You couldn't make a bucket. Your team stunk. How about instead of worrying about making $20 to play a video game with you, you get in the gym and you work your ass off. That was my initial thought.
And you can't.
Hold on. Let me finish so I don't get ripped into meat. But that thought can't be the coach's thought.
Nope.
That cannot be your thought as a modern day coach. You have to get rid, because every coach worth his salt thinks like that. Hey, dude, why are you worried about this when you couldn't make a freaking jump shot and you're a point guard? You can't think that way as a coach now.
Well, you can't say it. You can think that way. You just can't say it.
You can't act on it.
Yeah, you can't act on it. Yeah, because well, it's like what Izzo had a great line. He says, you know, there's certain things he used to say as players, the three things. You know, you can only be good at two or three: academics, your basketball, and your social life. And now he puts social media. You really can only be good, probably, if you really want to be great at something, only be probably good at two of those three or two of those four. He said, now you're adding the NIL into it, all right? Like, so, like, you know, it's the opposite. See, it's the typical of kind of what we're in right now is, you know, and I'll use the overtime elite in the same thing, because I want to get into that to finish up. But, like, do you want to work on your game, or do you want to work on your brand? Or is your brand going to be more important than your game? Because if your brand's more important than your game, it's great. You're gonna monetize that today. But if your dream was to maybe have a chance to be a pro, you have no chance if you spend more time on your brand than your game. And then, you know, same thing with academics, which we've totally devalued. So NIL is more important than your game, and it's become more important than academics. So where is academics? And then you got your social life. Where are those things? So, as opposed to saying, if I get really work hard at my game, then you know what? My brand's going to take care of itself. But you can't say that. As a coach right now, what I think you got to do is you've got to have all your ducks in a row and say, all right, we've got these opportunities that we're going to put our guys in a situation. We're going to bring someone in who's going to run their camps for them. They're going to do, you know, they're going to reach out to them, run their camps for them, run their autograph sessions for them, like Kentucky, Indiana, Kansas, Duke. Imagine their autograph sessions. They do three times a year. They charge $25 an autograph on a team poster. How many, if they did it three times a year at Indiana before a football game, before three football games, how many a weekend could they sign?
I don't know the number, but and there is a malaise that has been reignited by Woody. So I think right now, if Indiana is smart, I've talked to them about certain things, and I talked to Woody the other day about some of these things. I think they'd sell a ton. And I think every player ought to give $5 to Mike Woodson, because he doesn't need it. But because players on their own without the resurgence of Woody. Now, Kentucky's different. Like, I've always said this, the Kentucky fan base, Indiana's got the unbelievable fan base, but it ain't Kentucky's fan base. Like, you and I did games in Bahamas. The game was at 4 in the Bahamas at whatever the hell that resort's called.
Yes.
And these guys are lined up sitting down at 8 a.m. Indiana's not going to do that. Indiana, he's on a different level, so take them out. Indiana would sell a ton, and kids will make a ton of money doing it, I think. And they do.
Well, here's the last thing. You know what's bothering them now? I'm watching this overtime elite, whatever it is, team, and they're selling it. We're teaching guys how to be pros. I got a question. We're teaching guys how to, you know, the pro game. The last time I checked, I don't know, but the last time I checked, whether it's John Calipari or Duke or Kansas or Indiana or all a myriad of college programs, they've done a pretty good job preparing guys to be ready to play at the next level. Like, I look at the young players in the league. I mean, Tatum's pretty good. Jamal Murray's pretty good. Karl Anthony Towns is pretty good. DeAndre Ayton's pretty good. I mean, you go down all these, like, what do you think? Wait. So you think that over time you're teaching them something that, you know, the pro game, you're teaching them something that the best coaches in the world aren't teaching them? Like, they've dropped the ball and they haven't worked on player development. Man, I mean, guys have been working on player development for the last 40 years, and now you're going to be the only guys working on player development. But here's my bigger concern with something like that: 5 years from now. Right. There's never been a semi-pro organization that's made it. Never been a semi-pro organization that's made it. So 5 years from now, if that thing is defunct, where do those guys go back to? They don't have a college to go back to. They don't have an organization to go back to. They don't have a support system to go back to. They're leaving out of high school. So with 2 years left, what are they ready for in the real world?
Seth? Here,
and that's a concern for me.
I mean, look, I'm one of those. That's the only concern I have. I've been on every side of this. You can't name a side of college basketball that I haven't been on, whether it's recruit's father, whether it's a player or a player's father, any coaching thing, except that's the one thing that I'm anxious to see 5 years. So let me tell you something. If anybody at Overtime Elite or whatever the hell it is thinks that they understand how to be a pro better than Juwan Howard, who's in his third year in college basketball, or Mike Woodson, who's just starting, they can kiss my ass, because those two guys understand the pro game from having been in the pro game from that long, and they also understand it from a player/compassion point of view, meaning a mental point of view, not just a here's how you make money, here's, you know, end of clock situation, and here's how you live in a hotel. They have it from a mentality, a compassion, a toughness point of view that I don't give a damn. And you know what else, Seth? When you go to college, you get knocked on your ass. And I'm not talking about knocked on your ass on the court. You get knocked on your ass socially. You get knocked on your ass by seeing other guys being in an environment. You know, you go to a thing at 18 to 19 years old, and it's in a stale environment of just basketball.
100%.
You're not ready for after you're done playing basketball. I don't care. And don't tell me about the money. Isaiah Thomas, Coach Knight, and myself, when Isaiah was running the Players Association, Zeke told us 52 cents on every dollar comes out of your pocket to the government, to your agent, to wherever. 52 cents on a dollar. Now, you're also spending money while you're doing this. So don't tell me you're going to end up lifetime rich playing in these things. I think, you know what, if it's an avenue for kids, go do it. But I'm exactly like you, Seth, and we are considered outdated and dinosaurs. But I've always believed that my job as a college coach was to get you a degree and make damn sure that you at least have the tools that I can provide you. I'm not saying they're the greatest tools, but they're the ones that I can provide you for how to be a husband, a dad, a businessman, whatever. And 5 years from now, we'll see. I'll tell you the last thing about
a year from now. I'm interested to see this. Dennis Dodd made a really good point. He said, you know, when these stipends came out, cost of attendance things came out, boy, it was going to be the end of the world, blah, 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 blah. We don't even talk about those now. I'm anxious to see if all this NIL stuff, are we talking about it in a year? Are we talking about it?
Question. NIL, is that all? I mean, the cost of attendance, is that gone now?
I don't think anything.
The cost of attendance when guys are making money on name, image, and likeness.
I don't think anything's gone. I think it's just added in. Yeah. One thing I got to say, though, people always say, well, kids don't understand the tax implications. Stop it. Look, if I'm a head coach and Seth Greenberg's a head coach, I guarantee you we have people there explaining the tax implications to kids. Okay. I mean, they're not on an island. So stop with that nonsense. Kids will understand the tax implications because coaches and athletic departments will ensure that they do. Now,
100%.
Will they screw it up? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, anyone can screw it up. I'm going to finish with this. I have a former player, played for Long Beach State. His son is a very, very good player, really good. Young kid, ninth grader, great, going to be a great player. His uncle played in the NBA. I don't want to mention the kid's name, but anyway. And I had this conversation with him yesterday because I got a call from Frank Burleson, who was my beat writer at Long Beach State, said, you'd be so proud of so-and-so. His son is a great player, but he's more importantly, he's his dad. He's not his coach. He's also a very, very successful coach, the kid's dad. He said he's not trying to do this with him. He's not trying to say he's letting him be a kid. He's letting him coach him. He's letting him experience this thing. So I called this player up yesterday just to say, man, I'm so proud of you. Just amazing. You know, your son's a terrific player, but you know, you're more importantly, you're an amazing dad to him, and you're there for him, but you're not hovering over him. I said, you know, I read all this stuff about Overtime Elite and these other things. He goes, Coach, I want my son to be a kid. I said, I don't want to send him away and miss some of the best years of his life, some of the greatest experiences that are going to help nurture him and help him grow and help him develop and help him be a better person, that he's going to be around other people. I don't want him in this sheltered environment. He said, I want him to experience life as a 16-year-old, as a 15-year-old, as a 17-year-old. He said, I don't get it. And now here's a kid who's out. His brother works in the NBA, played in the NBA. All right. He was a very good player for me. And like, I almost felt like saying, Blank, you need to go out and talk of this because you have a great perspective on this. You're a terrific player. Your brother was a terrific player. Your son is phenomenal, maybe the best player in his age group coming out. And you say, I want him to be a normal 16-year-old and experience it. And he can't grow, he can't mature, he can't develop. We're going to put him in this little cocoon as opposed to have him learn to interact with all different types of people and to be in an environment where he's getting an education and he's going to class and he has friends and he's not separated himself from the rest of the world. And I tell you one thing, I got choked up talking to him yesterday. I was walking in the mean streets of Avon. And that was like one of my, I literally was such a good moment for me because I said, you know what? He gets it. And that's what your goal was as a coach, is to get a guy, you know, to be a good husband, a good parent, and have perspective. And it was a really cool moment for me.
Seth, see, that is. And you know, there's a lot of things that factor in that guy being that good a guy, but you're one of the biggest factors, and that's the coolest. Seth, people don't understand this. Like, I think at least four times a week I get a text from one of my former players about something stupid or something funny or something in their life or something whatever. You know what I mean? And that's
why you coach. That's why you got into coach.
And that's, truthfully, it's also one of the reasons why you went and became a player. Because you like that environment. Like, I always tell people, well, I was Coach Knight. Like, hey, man, I didn't like him sometimes. I liked him sometimes, but I got great stories from being there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's good stuff. Yeah, it's really
cool. Hey, and plus, that guy's going to be part of your boy, the Fonster. He's going to put together a little reunion when we go to California this summer, and we'll tell even more.
The Fonster. For those of you that don't know, the cast of characters that hangs out with Seth Greenberg is rivaled only by Ocean's 11 and those clowns. But also, for those of you that don't know, Seth Greenberg and his boy Lee Fitting and his boy Langer got their ass kicked by Double D, and they've been ducking me ever since. It's a 2-month duck.
It's we got to figure out a Ryder Cup type event.
Yeah,
the Gary boys against the Mean Streets. Yeah. Hold on.
I want all handicaps. Neutral course. The pro at Firestone went to Indiana. I can get this done. It's halfway between.
Not exactly halfway between.
I got 6 hours, 5 hours of Firestone. What do you got, Akron?
I don't know, but I'm going to be in Dayton, so I might have to for the TBT. We might have to have a meet on the off day.
What day's the off day?
I think it's the 2nd of August.
You know what? True story. I think I have jury duty that day.
Oh boy, lucky that luck.
Hey. I say on this podcast, and I say on my radio show, if I'm on the jury, you're guilty. That's my way of trying to get out of jury duty.
You just incriminated yourself. The world's greatest podcast never disappoints. We talk NBA, we talk NIL, we talk the portal, we talk life. Doesn't get any better.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Check out more great podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.